Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight is our Super Bowl wrap-up show with our guest, former Green Bay Packer Jude Waddy.
Andy, thanks for inviting me back.
My pleasure. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. And if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I'll be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be our annual vampire-themed Valentine's Day party. Valentine's Day at the Vampire Lounge. That'll be this Friday, February 10th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at Taj Lounge, 48 West 21st Street, between 5th and 6th Avenues. Admission is free. There'll be free ruby red lip makeovers by Jade Daru, free massages by Karen Yanko, discounted vampire fangs courtesy of Tom Misfit, and a performance by the world's only lounge-singing vampire, the infamous Baron Misuraca. There'll be lots more surprises, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, tastingnyc.com. The Andy Troy Show has a fan page on Facebook that contains links to previous shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching the Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. My good friend and producer John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. So, Jude, how we doing?
Doing good, doing good. All of New York is celebrating the great Super Bowl win by the Giants, and, you know, I'm actually caught up in the fanfare as well. I am a Green Bay Packer fan because that's where most of my loyalties lie, but I think some of the Giants' big blue has rubbed off on me.
Yeah, it was quite a ball game we had yesterday.
You know, that's all you can really ask for, a really good competitive championship game, and that's exactly what we got. You saw great athletic play. You saw great tactics from both sides of the field, both coaches, all the way up to the very end. And like you'd always want to see a great game, you want it to come down to the last play, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, there were a number of key plays in the game. One of them was that Patriots play with 12 guys on the field. I mean, you know, sometimes you see that with a guy running off the field, but these guys were all standing there in position. I can't remember seeing that on a crucial play before.
Well, you know, in a big game like this, sometimes even the person who is responsible for keeping count of the number of heads on the field loses count. You know, it may have been an injury somewhere on the sideline or a miscommunication or a certain defensive or offensive package that they were looking to implement, and somehow one extra person got caught up in the mix or didn't get the memo.
Well, that was crucial because there was a fumble, I believe, by Victor Cruz on that play. And that could have made a big difference in the game. And the Giants not only didn't fumble, but picked up 5 yards. I mean, that was big.
Hey, that's the universe of football. It happens that way. It's a game of inches and missed opportunities. And for that play and a few other plays throughout the game, the Patriots didn't capitalize on the opportunities that were presented to them or that they have earned. And unfortunately, they had to lose the game.
The Giants made out really good in the fumble department because there were two more in the game that would have counted. However, in both cases, they were sharp enough to get on the ball, sharp or lucky enough for both, to get on the ball before it ended up in Patriot hands.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say they were both because football is not round like a basketball, so it is the luck of the bounce. If the ball hits the ground on the tip, it can go in any direction. So I can say they were very fortunate but aware of the situation and their environment, and, again, they capitalized.
Yeah, a lot of it, as we were talking about yesterday, comes down to just the way the ball bounces or floats. Or what did you think of that Wes Welker play? I mean, he's caught a lot of flack, particularly from Tom Brady's wife.
But, so sad.
She had more to say than Brady ever would, I think. But
I've never seen her catch a football, so I think she should just continue being a fan in the stands and just, yeah.
Stop making trouble for her husband.
I agree. And, you know, maybe it wasn't the perfect pass, but the pass was in a position to where he was the only athlete that could have caught that ball. He just didn't come down with it. And, again, that's football. You know, Brady has a very powerful, strong arm, and it was a tight spiral. There was nothing wrong with that pass. You know, he just didn't pull it in. Maybe he wanted to run a little bit faster, or he was trying to turn a little too soon instead of make the catch, secure the ball, and then continue to progress. But, you know, that's what happens.
And we're talking about, say what? Betty is contributing her football expertise. Betty, what are you going to tell us? This is our engineer, Betty.
Tell Giselle to go walk the runway, which is her job.
Okay, Betty. Giselle, if you're listening in, that is some instructions for you to follow. Speaking of Welker, something that's kind of interesting for a guy who's been as successful as he was undrafted, right?
Yeah, a lot of us were. You know, I was undrafted, and a lot of players have to fight their way into the NFL, and they're not fortunate enough to be a high draft pick or first round or even a seventh round draft pick. So, like it is, just like in the playoffs, you want to get your foot in the door, and once you make it to training camp, then you have to show and prove. And an undrafted athlete has to work a lot harder because you only get one or two opportunities a day in practice. And those one or two opportunities have to be right on. You can't miss a step. You can't be out of position. I mean, it's like having a final exam every day.
It doesn't seem like it comes down to ability as much as just numbers because there's so many guys in the country. They look at a list, how fast do you run? How many times do you bench 225? And it's like, here's your score. Nice meeting you, right?
Well, there are so many other factors that involve that as well. It's not only your statistics, your physical attributes, but how well do you get along with the team? Do you fit in with the team? Are you able to absorb the amount of offensive or defensive plays that are being implemented every night? And can you apply the changes that the coaches are inputting at the end of every practice? So it's more than just this guy's a physical specimen. Can he fit in this team? Will he be a part of our family, and will he be able to contribute? Then it comes down to the numbers. You could have five or six wide receivers that fit your family perfectly, but if you need six running backs or six defensive linemen, unfortunately, somebody has to make room.
The Giants ended up with a bit of a tight end problem in that game. I mean, how often do you see both of your tight ends getting hurt in the same game?
Oh, wow. It's a tough game. Football is definitely a tough game, but you got to be able to adjust.
Yeah, I think Beckham's going to miss the whole 2012 season from what I saw.
Oh, man.
Torn his ACL.
Oh, that's really sad. I don't know if he'll miss the whole season. Man, the strides that our trainers and the athletes have overcome with knee injuries and injuries like that can bring people back quite fast. But he'll have a lot of recovery to do, and he'll have to strengthen that leg up and then get confidence on that leg again so he can perform to the level that he has been performing.
I think the Super Bowl ring might help him with that a little, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Super Bowl ring, it's going to wear him down a little bit, but he can use it as a, you know, as a weight.
Now, speaking of catches, Welker's wasn't made, but a pretty outstanding catch was that Manningham catch. What did you think of that?
Right on the sideline. I mean, concentration, not only by Manningham, but Eli, to put it in a position to where he could catch the ball and still remain in bounds, even though it was just the pitter-patter of his 2 feet right before he was pushed out of bounds. None of the other defenders were in position to catch that ball or break it up. I mean, that wasn't luck. That was practice, and that was talent and skill on both athletes.
From what I remember earlier in that game, and I could be wrong about this, it seemed like there was a play to Manningham where he didn't pay attention to where he was on the sidelines, caught the ball, and was out of bounds. So it was great that on that play he was able to just drag his feet in perfectly with a guy who seemed to give him a pretty good shot on the shoulder, too. I could have saw an interference call on that play.
Yeah, well, I'm glad the refs let the players play. You know, as a defender, you know, I'm kind of frustrated with the contact rules that defensive backs and linebackers have against wide receivers, but it's definitely to make the game more of an offensive scoring game to keep it more exciting, I assume. But you just saw a great play, great concentration on both sides of the ball.
That has been a change in recent years. And is that one of the reasons why there is more scoring? They really seem to have put the clamps on the defensive players in terms of what they can actually do.
Yeah, you're right. And what you don't see is the contact from the offensive players that occur past 5 yards, past 15 yards. And, you know, it's there are subtle tricks that every wide receiver, every defensive back has to create a little bit of space so you can give your chance an opportunity to make a play, whether it be to break up a ball, whether it be to intercept it, or whether it be to catch the ball. But, you know, it's just one of the changes in the game that you have to adjust to. It's like natural selection. If you don't adjust and you can't adhere to the new rules, you won't play.
And we have someone who calls himself Fan in the Stand who agrees with you. So that's good to know.
Thanks a lot, Fan in the Stands.
Yes. A fan who understands. Okay. So now, where does the second Super Bowl ring put Eli, you think? You know, Peyton, obviously, we talked about this a little yesterday, has been overshadowing him. His career is his older brother. He's such a larger-than-life personality. But Eli's kind of leading him 2-1 in Super Bowls now.
Well, you know, it's more than just the Super Bowl rings. Like, Eli is leading his team, and, you know, he's a team player. Like, honestly, I think the Colts, they're hamstrung. If Peyton's not playing, they really didn't have anything else to keep them as a top tier team. And that honestly shows just how strong the Giants team is, but how Eli can lead that many great athletes and that many different, you know, levels of talent to come up with a Super Bowl win. I mean, look back in the season. They weren't slated to make it to the Super Bowl, and they had a really rough start, but they reevaluated themselves, found a way to make it happen, and found a way to win.
What did you expect from them coming into this year? Because I know nobody really expected them to be where they are, and I don't think a lot of people expected them to be as bad as they were when they were in the midst of that horrific losing streak. I mean, what did you expect coming into the year?
I expected them to lose to Green Bay very bad and their season to be over, and I wore my jersey at a Brooklyn bar to emphasize that, and it didn't work out that way, so it went a little rough for me, but I'm very happy for the Giants. Like, they found a way to overcome and win, and that's what you want to see in football. Like, I am very impressed with their teamwork and their ability to come together and consolidate and put together a winning championship season. I mean, it's incredible.
But you did expect them to get to the Green Bay game, then. Did you expect them to be a playoff team this year?
I did. I did expect them to make it to the playoffs this year. Early on, it looked a little rough, but you know, some teams that you suspect to be good in the season sometimes turn out not so good. And the Giants have always had a consistent defense, a consistent offense. And with Eli, with his talent, he's the wild card. So if he's having a good season or if he starts to come into his own late in the season, he can change an entire season around like he did. So, yeah, I expected the Giants, and honestly, I expected the Jets to make it to the playoffs. But, you know, I didn't expect them to beat the Packers, and I'm still hearing it for that.
There's a lot of green that didn't end up in the playoffs, Jets and Packers this year.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
What do you think is going to happen with the Jets next year? I mean, they're the team that's had a lot of turmoil in the locker room. How big is that? How big is the chemistry in the locker room?
It's big, and honestly, I'm very disappointed at what's happening, well, what's being perceived as happening in the Jets locker room. Like, you know, there's a lot of blame going on about, oh man, there's just so much finger pointing going on right now, and that's not beneficial to the team. You can't grow that way. They had a bad season, you know, maybe some plays they would have liked to have had back, but you are supposed to look at it as a learning experience, as a chance to get better next year. And you know, a lot of people are calling for, you know, this guy to be cut or this guy to be traded or this coach, and I don't agree with that. I think they should stick together and stick it out and find a way to win next year.
Because it wasn't long ago they were calling for Coughlin's head as well.
Exactly.
And had some negative things to say about Eli until this little winning streak, which incidentally, I am wearing the shirt
again
that I credit with a large part of the Giants' success this year, because I bought this shirt at the Jet-Giant game before, and they had lost like 6 out of 7. And they have not lost since. So.
Folks, Andy's superstitious.
I have washed the shirt, though.
That's good. I appreciate it.
No, I don't actually believe in that, but it is, in fact, the case. And Bill Parcells, tell me if Parcells was here that he wouldn't have me sequestered.
Oh, man.
Me and the shirt.
that's very, wow.
Bill was into that stuff, wasn't he?
Yeah, like, you know, everyone has their rituals, and, oh, wow, that's a good one, Andy.
Yeah, some guys, you know, they won't step on the sideline. They got to eat the same thing. You ever watch Rules of Engagement?
Yeah.
Do you ever see Jeff when he's watching a football game? He's got to eat, like, get the same food from the same Chinese pizza place, I think, every year. And they sold it, and it was a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
He was, like, flipping out.
You know, the one thing about that, it's just a way for someone to have a consistency in their routine. And it really doesn't help, but it helps settle their mind. It helps them focus into what they're doing. So if they went and got a slice of pizza from this particular place and this particular person, you know, they want to do it every time. So what can you say?
So you were not a superstitious player, though?
No, I'm not a superstitious. I like to study my defenses and study my offenses and make sure that I could contribute to my teammates as best as I possibly could. And I just didn't waste any time being superstitious.
Okay. Well, we are going to go to our first commercial break, which we have to do after circling the table three times. No, we don't do that. Betty, take us to commercial, will you? We have to go through some rituals while we're gone. We'll be back.
Yo, this is Fat Elder Cannoli over here, and you are listening to the Chintani Broadcasting Network, high definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Knight Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me an email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hey, Mia.
Frankie, hey, John.
Where are we?
We're at Umberto's Clam House.
Umberto's.
132 Mulberry Street.
It's the place to be. What are you kidding?
Little Italy.
Hey, are we having fun? Is the food good?
Oh, my God. Food the gnocchi. Great. The marinara. Oh. The mozzarella.
I ate three times tonight. I can't. So much.
Well, Chintani Broadcasting loves Umberto's at 132 Mulberry Street. In fact, that's why we broadcast from here. When you're in Little Italy, come down and watch a live broadcast or tune in, and anytime you're around, come and eat. Tutta mangiamo, si!
Tu mangiare, hey!
Mangia.
Umberto's Clam House.
Okay, we're back, and we are wrapping up this year's football season with Jude Waddy. Now, Jude, how unusual and how surprised are you that the game started off with a safety?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I
that's
don't
know. Two this year for the Giants in the playoffs.
That's pretty incredible, especially at a, what is it, a grounding call, right?
Yeah, well, Brady, they decided, was throwing the ball away to avoid a sack in the end zone.
Mm-hmm, hey.
And it's not usual that it's that far down the field, down the middle of the field, that they call that. But he didn't get outside the tackle box.
He didn't get outside the tackle box. There was no apparent receiver in his vicinity. I mean, that's just, you know, a mistake that Brady had. And why didn't Giselle say something about that?
Yes, Giselle. Do you realize you were dating a six-round draft choice, Giselle, by the way? Brady was not the type of blue chipper that you're used to, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's wrong, Andy.
He's come up pretty big, though. He's had a nice little career for a six-round pick, huh?
You know, and that just goes to prove sometimes the draft position doesn't always count. I mean, you don't want to really single anyone out, but let's look at Ryan Leaf. You know, he was a first-round draft pick, and what happened? You know, he had a monster of an arm in college. But, you know, maybe he couldn't handle the pressure in the NFL or...
Leaf kind of got blown away, basically.
Basically, you know, maybe, you know, he was just a star in college, like a big fish in a small pond. But when he got into the ocean, you know, the whales ate him up.
The Giants have another one of those, David Carr.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the first pick? In fact, the Giants, I think, are the only team to have two guys who are both the number one pick in the NFL draft. Eli and David Carr both playing quarterback.
I mean, it's awesome. But sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you don't, and again, it's those subtle nuances that might have been missed or overlooked within the draft or within the drafting position that would cause a player like Brady to go in the sixth round. But it worked out for the Patriots because they got him for a great, you know, great position, and look what happened.
Yeah. Now, this was kind of an interesting point that came up. When I saw the play, I thought this had to be what was going on, and it's what they're talking about. That last touchdown the Giants scored, where it looked like he was not trying to score a touchdown, right? And you saw him turn around and kind of fall back in the end zone, but I knew he definitely looked like he was trying to not go in. Well, and from what I read, Eli was yelling to him, don't score. Because I was thinking that myself going in, isn't it better to run the clock down to nothing, kick a field goal, and not hand Tom Brady back the ball with a minute and a half to go? What do you think makes sense in that position?
This is true, but at that point, the Giants were still down. So we've seen, especially in the playoffs, especially in the last championship games, kickers can miss field goals. So honestly, looking at it in hindsight, it was the best decision they could have made to score. But again, you don't want to give Brady a chance to score on the last play with the Hail Mary. He has a strong enough arm to get it into the end zone from almost anywhere. And, you know, it was a very dangerous play. But also, from Belichick's point of view, that hole opened up so wide, I think he wanted them to score so he could get his offense back on that field.
Oh, they said that. They said that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what, I mean, it was just amazing tactics from both teams. I wouldn't have went down either. I would have definitely scored. Maybe I would have slowed down a little bit more maybe when he got so close and let someone push me in, but, I mean, wow.
Have you ever played on a defense that strategically did that, just said, let's let this guy score so we got some time left on the clock?
Never, never. Someone has the ball, hit him in the face, and then that's that.
Okay, yeah. I found it a very odd play to watch, but as it turns out, they almost didn't end up needing a Hail Mary because there was a pass play before that that if he had caught the ball, there was no Giant in the picture. Yeah. He could have ended up on the 20.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And maybe he could have ran all the way in, you know, if he'd caught it. And, you know, but again, you know, maybe a lapse of concentration. Maybe that's what he was thinking as well. Like, oh, if I catch this ball, I'm scoring. And he dropped it.
Now, we were talking yesterday about Chase Blackburn, mm-hmm. who was about to be a substitute math teacher.
Big interception.
Intercepting a pass in the Super Bowl.
Big interception. What a play.
How big of a role do you think Gronkowski's injury was in that? Because he's got great elevation normally.
Well, I think that was just a good play. I mean, Chase jumped right up there with him, and it doesn't matter who was out there. I think he would have made that interception. But as it looked, the ball was underthrown a little bit. So he had time to catch up, get himself in position, and when the ball's in the air, it's anybody's ball. It's not necessarily for the offensive player, and he just wanted it more. Congratulations on a great play and a great second start to your career.
Yeah, from everything I hear, he's supposed to be a real good guy. Have you met him?
I haven't met him yet. I haven't met him, but I'm inspired by his story, and I'm very happy that he had a second chance, and I'm really impressed that he was able to come back and contribute the way he did to the Giants, even though he kind of had to sit out for a little while. Like, that's just amazing.
Yeah, that's. What did you think of Gronkowski's play in the game? I mean, did it seem like he was himself or what?
Seemed a little off, maybe a half a step slow, you know, but, you know, if you step on that field, you are declaring that you are ready to play 100%. If you're a little injured and there's someone else that could play that position better, you owe it to your team to step aside and let that person shine no matter what, because it's about the team, not just the individual. But the Patriots, and he thought he was well enough and the best player out there to go and play that position. So my hat's off. He went out there to play. And if he was a half step slow, you know, that's the price you pay.
One of the things that interested me is, you know, they always talk about the keys to a team winning. And one of the main keys what they said for the Giants basically was pass rush and deep passing game. And the Giants really did not have an effective deep passing game in that game. The Patriots seemed like they went out of their way to take that away. Eli was patient and took the underneath stuff. Until that Manningham 38-yard pass, they really didn't have – that was the biggest pass play in the game, right?
And I think that's a brilliant strategy. And, yeah, you know, that's what all the critics and the armchair quarterbacks, you know, thought. But – it's not what it is. You know, when you're out there in the game, you have to adjust to what you're given. And, of course, they forced the run down the Patriots' throat and established themselves, which opened up more of an opportunity to pass later in the game. But, you know, strategy can go out the window. If something's working or something's not working, you adjust, you reevaluate, and you go with what You go with what works best.
Okay, now, another guy who I think is a bit of an unsung hero, although he was talked about a decent amount, is Weatherford. You know, he was the first guy, I read this stat today, the first guy in Super Bowl history to drop three punts inside the 10.
Wow. I did not know that. Really?
That's what I read in the paper today. Yeah. Most punts inside the 10. The Giants set the record today.
Wow.
Oh, and not today, yesterday.
But that's pretty impressive. And from a defensive point of view, if you can do that, like, you don't really ever want a good punt returner to get that ball. If you can get a punter that can angle it out by the 5, by the 10, and resist the touchback, that's brilliant. And I think every punter should do that. Like, if I were a special teams coach, I would look for that punter that could make sure they could never return one of those punts. You can kick the ball 60 yards down the field. Even if it has to roll, make sure it gets out of bounds before it gets into the end zone.
Well, that first punt, I think they dropped it at the 6.
Wow.
Set up that safety. And that really set the tone. Then the Giants scored a touchdown. It looked to me like they had the potential to run away with that game at that point. Then it was actually a big penalty on our buddy Kevin Booth,
yeah,
which I think kept that game from getting possibly out of hand in the Giant favor, right?
I don't think the Patriots would have let it get out of hand. Like, it's, you know, two championship caliber teams. It wouldn't have got out of hand, but you could see a little bit of the urgency in the Patriots when they were down by 9. You know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, what's going on? Let's get it back together. And that first touchdown that Brady threw, you saw the reaction. Like, he was in the game, and he was ready to go.
Yeah, the Patriots scored, the Giants scored the first 9, the Patriots scored the next 10.
Yeah.
And unless I'm wrong, wasn't that the same halftime score in the first Giants Super Bowl game, I think, in 86? I think they were losing to Denver 10-9
wow.
at halftime. I always remember that the Giants were losing at halftime in that game, because I always thought of that team as, like, one of the great teams ever.
Wow.
That Giant 86 team.
That's
I actually
good.
Looked that up. I believe it was 10-9 in that game at halftime.
Wow. Well, Andy, in 86, what was I doing? I wasn't watching much football, Andy, so I can't say.
I'll get you some of the old films. I like that
on
stat.
Betamax.
I like that stat they came up with yesterday. Supposedly there's no video of Super Bowl I.
Yeah, I remember you said that. That's crazy. And, well, you'd think in today's time somebody would have it, but, yeah, I wonder what happened to that.
Well, there was no home recording equipment, I don't think, back then. And, you know, the network, from what I read, taped over it or something.
I mean, somebody have, like, the old wind-up cameras in the back of the end zone? I'm sure someone has some film, because even back then, there was defensive study. So there has to be someone with film. It might just only be an end zone view, you know, for all four quarters, but it has to be a copy out there somewhere.
You know what else I read there's no film of? The basketball game where Will Chamberlain scored 100 points against the Knicks.
Wow.
I don't think there's film of that. Speaking of the Knicks, we actually have the game on behind us. I just wanted to take a moment and pay our condolences to Nick Forward, Amari Stoudemire's family. His brother was killed in a car accident.
Oh, wow.
Yesterday, and he's actually not with the team tonight. So.
Oh, man.
Another
yeah.
New York team who I grew up with.
That's sad to hear, man. He'll be in our prayers.
Yeah. So we're actually going to go to commercials shortly, because Betty, our engineer, is cruel but fair. And we'll be back with more interesting football insight. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Cent'anni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo.
Broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian-American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo-Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's GIAMONDO.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
Thank you. Hi, this is James C. Napadano on Centani Broadcasting. Please listen to the Jackpot Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you will hear comedy, music, and conversation for intelligent people only. Once again, it's the Jackpot Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Centani Broadcasting.
Okay, we're back, and we were just giving our props to Betty, our engineer, because we've got a Chinese guy in the NBA now. Betty, are you aware of that? There's like the point guard for the Knicks, who was like an Ivy League caliber, you know, student, and graduated from Harvard, and is running the Knicks right now. So, Mr. Lin, good job. I'm sure they're very excited in Forest Hills, from what I hear. Okay. And to Eli, the first quarterback in New York history to win two Super Bowls.
Yeah, wow. You know, he's definitely making his mark as a legendary quarterback here, man. And he's still going. Like, you know, two Super Bowls, he's not done yet. No injuries, the team is still strong, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to divide and conquer and start going off to other teams to earn their, you know, $10, $20 million salaries. They're going to stick together and try to do this again next year, you know. Cool.
We just got a text. Jude, you have a very calming and soothing voice. I've always said that. This is what makes you an excellent guest.
I'm getting ready for the quiet storm.
Good. You would actually be very good as a minister or something. I think you could get your own religion going. There's a lot of money in that, by the way.
No thanks, guys.
No, okay.
None of that.
Now, how do you think this team compares to the 08 team, by the way?
Wow. Honestly, I'd say they work together better than the 08 team. I mean, to have such a dismal start, if they had a start like this in 08, I don't think they would have had the same end result. And the way they pulled it together and strapped up their cleats and made it happen is just a testament of a very, I mean, I'm at a loss of words. It's what everyone wants to be a part of. If you're playing football, like, you know, you have people conspiring against you. You have adversity early in the season, and you find a way to make it happen. Like, it's amazing.
Well, they had the three big pass rushers in 08, mm-hmm. and they have three big pass rushers this year, really. The only change is Pierre Paul for Strahan.
Yeah, that's true. But, again, he brings a different dynamic.
He blocks a lot of passes.
Yes, he does. And the thing is, if you have a Strahan, you know, a lot of the offensive blockers will shift towards that side because he's such a force on the defensive line. And because maybe he wasn't as well known yet, and of course he won't have this luxury next year, he was able to put a lot more pressure on because they didn't expect him to do as much. I mean, it's just awesome that he had a chance to go out there and show that he is one of the elite pass rushers in really all of the Giants' defense. You know, it's great, man. They have a great unit there.
And he really didn't play until very late in life. I think it was like, I can't remember exactly whether it was like in college, I think, before he started playing football.
Yeah.
Pierre Paul. He's just talking about a real natural athlete.
Well, you know, for some people, you know, starting football later in their lives and later in their careers will give them a longer career span in football. Like, I started in 10th, 11th grade, and I really didn't understand the philosophy of football until I got into college. But, you know, a lot of my classmates growing up through elementary and ultimately into high school started in Pee Wee and Pop Warner. And by the time they reached high school, they were burnt out. They didn't want to see football. They didn't want to put a helmet on. They didn't want to go through another summer of training camp. And just imagine, you have training camp from Pop Warner all the way to high school, which can be up to 8 to 10 years, and then you have college, and then if you're lucky, you have the NFL. That's a lot of football. That's getting hit in the head a lot.
Yeah, well, I was a receiver, and the problem was when, you know, junior high school level, those guys don't know how to run a team with 11 guys. They used to, like, 2-on-2 in the street.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of time for a deep passing game, and it was cold in New York.
Yeah, it is.
They spent a lot of time standing around. I switched to basketball. It's actually when I got my drumsticks out and had a whole different career.
Fair enough.
Now, the Giant defense had a pretty bad run for a while. Obviously, injuries played a key role. OC had to get healthy.
Yep.
What do you think? Is there anything else do you think that was the key to that turnaround? Because it was a huge change around the time of that Jet game.
You know, they found their identity, and that's what it's all about. Like, you know, around the right time, they all started to heal up and come back closer to 100%. But it's finding your identity, finding what works for you. How do you blitz? What can you blitz? You know, who can cover man to man? And who can you, like, leave on an island and know that they'll lock that side of the field down? And who do you have to send help to with the safeties? And depending on the team you play, how can you use your weaknesses to your advantage? I mean, my hat's off to the Giants defensive coordinator and the whole Giants team and the defensive team. Like, they were able to figure out that code and made it work for them.
I'm glad you brought him up, because there's another guy who was being ripped to shreds halfway through the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, him and Coughlin both were like idiots, and now they're geniuses. It's amazing how things can turn around when you guys get healthy.
Yeah, but here in New York, people are very, very quick to make judgments. And, you know, you lose two games. All right, that's it. We need a new coach. We need to get rid of everyone. And, you know, football is not just a one quarter or a one down game. It goes into the fourth quarter. It goes until late into the season. And injury and recovering from injury and adjusting and evolving into a different team or a better team later in the game or later in the season is very important in football. So it's something that a lot of non-athletes, critics, armchair quarterbacks really can't understand. But look, the Giants won and they figured it out, and I'm glad that they were able to resist the trash talk and resist all of the negative comments coming from those who really didn't understand what was going on.
How different would the mood in New York be if that pass from Romo didn't float a little bit?
Yeah, it'd be quite different. Quite different right now. And it would be sad, because as you see, they're a Super Bowl caliber team. And if that pass had not floated, maybe another team would be in the Super Bowl. And the Giants team may not be the Giants that we know, the Super Bowl champions that we see now.
Well, I've always thought there was a lot to that. You're not as bad as you look when you're losing, or as good as you look when you're winning. Mm-hmm. And the Giant defense, they had a bad stretch. And yet, obviously, there's really not different guys out there.
It's not. You know?
I mean, they got OC back, and Tuck got healthy. I mean, I think that really was key. I mean, how big a part of the team is he? You know?
Well, you know, it adds another dynamic. If you have someone who can pressure from the outside and also put more pressure in the inside and change the running game or change the timing of the quarterback, because you don't have 5.2 seconds, you have 3.9 or 4.2 seconds, and that extra tenth of a second or two-tenths of a second could change the entire game. And with athletes like OC and Tuck coming at you full speed and throwing offensive linemen at you as they're jumping at you, will make a quarterback change his decisions very quickly.
Now, they didn't like the Giants' offseason this year at all. The media, the fans.
They don't play football, though.
And it kind of reminded me of a couple of years ago. The Giants picked up three guys in the offseason. It was Chris Canty, Rocky Bernard, mm-hmm. and Mike Boley.
Yep.
And none of them had much of an impact, and they were kind of getting reamed for that. But all of those guys made significant contributions down the stretch this year, right?
Yes,
they did. Is that common? Sometimes it takes a while for things to work out.
You know, it's like putting pieces of a machine together. Like, sometimes the gears have to be changed up a little bit for the team that you're playing. You know, it's really never set in stone. Like, if you're going to get this first-round draft pick or this star or this celebrity or this, you know, superstar athlete like Ocho Cinco, like, come on, it really doesn't matter. You could have talent, or you could be more suited to a certain type of team, certain type of offensive or defensive setup. But if it doesn't work for you, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, and you're going to be exposed.
How was that as a non-event, the Ocho Cinco move? I mean, did they even throw a ball to him in that game?
I don't remember seeing a ball get thrown to him, but maybe that wasn't his role in the game. Maybe he was just there to, you know, make the Giants study another athlete or another possibility of what Ocho could have brought to the game. So maybe it was one of Bill Belichick's secret tactics to increase the homework of the Giants players and the defensive coordinators as they prepared for this game.
Now, there's a couple of important guys on this team who may not be here next year. What is your feeling about Brandon Jacobs and OC? Do you think they're going to be back?
I think they're going to give the Giants the first right of refusal, because you really don't want to leave a championship team. It would have to be a very significant contract to pull them away. And ultimately, you're only as good as your last contract, and you have to plan for after football. So,
which we'll be talking about in our next segment. Good segue.
But, you know, I think that's something that they're going to have to consider for themselves and their families. But it's very hard to leave a championship team because that Super Bowl ring just shines on your finger. And I've never had that experience, but it would be hard to leave a winning team, a winning combination, because you are part of that winning combination. And to go somewhere else, it'd have to be motivated from something else.
Yeah, because OC actually has another year. I think they're in a different situation because OC has another year on his contract, but he almost didn't play this year with two more years on his contract. He's pretty unhappy with that contract.
Yeah, but now when you're a champion, you kind of get to have a little bit more of a bargaining tool, and we'll see. We'll see if OC will continue to be a team player and stay with the Giants or go find his fortune somewhere else.
Now, if you were the Giants GM, where would you be looking to improve this team next year? Like, where do they need to make some changes to stay on top? Because they've never done – I don't think they've ever been really even that close to the Super Bowl the year after they've won. They've won three times before this. Mm-hmm. 86 was a great team, didn't make it the Super Bowl the next year. 90, things kind of just kind of fell together right. They won the Super Bowl, didn't make it the next year. And, of course, 08, they didn't make it the next year.
You know, it's hard to say. Like – again, the offseason's going to have to would be a very big factor in it. Who wants to stay? Who wants to leave? Who can you keep on the team? And, you know, your salaries, your cap, the team salary cap is going to play a big part in it. And then it's also going to depend if some of the players are willing to sacrifice a little bit of salary or a little bit of opportunity to stay together with a winning team. And, you know, I really can't speak for those guys. Like, you know, everybody is honestly one play away from being out of football, whether it's you break your foot, whether you have a knee injury. You know, you never know what could end your football career because very, very few of us get to leave football when we're ready to leave. So it's going to be an interesting offseason to see who wants to leave, who wants to stay, or who absolutely has an opportunity to leave and what they want to do and how they react to that.
Personally, I think if they can keep OC, they really should. I mean, he adds a really dynamic aspect to that defense, that come around behind, slap the ball out of the quarterback's hand play. I mean,
it's a talent. Like, OC is very talented. It's all about strength, leverage, and timing and speed. And, you know, he's proven that he is one of the best at it. But, you know, again, if OC wants to go or has an opportunity to go somewhere else, you know, the Giants may have to look deep into their draft to see if there's a young buck out there somewhere that might be able to, if not next year, one day fill that role.
Well, they were talking about all they were looking for when he was complaining about his contract this year was a first-round pick. I wouldn't trade him for a first-round pick.
No.
How many first-round picks don't even pan out? This guy's one of the best defensive linemen in football, and how hard are those to come by? A guy as great as him.
Very hard. But, you know, again, OT is a part of this great defensive team. Like, you know, there is no one superstar on defense. It's the combination of everyone else. Like, you can have the absolute best defensive lineman in the world, but if your defensive secondary is horrible, they'll just pass on you. They can do it in 3 seconds or 2 seconds, no matter how fast or how good you are. So he is a part of this team, and thus, because the defensive backfield, the linebackers, are stepping up and doing what they need to do, it's giving OC the time to make that, to bend that corner and get to the quarterback and just under 4 seconds or just over 4 seconds to get that hand on the ball to pressure the quarterback. So, it's a combination of a lot of things that makes defenses very good and strong. But we'll have to see what happens next year.
Now, some people kind of saw this as a last hurrah for New England because they're not quite as dominant as they've been. What do you expect from them next year? Do they seem to be on the downswing here, or you expect the same thing from them?
I disagree. Every year they're consistently one of the top teams in the NFL, and I don't see them falling off. You make the playoffs as often as they do, and, you know, it's almost become automatic that you know you're going to see the Patriots somewhere in the playoffs, and that is a sign of a dominant team, of a dominant coach and staff. Like, it's amazing what they do, and I don't think there are very many teams that can say that they can be there as consistent as the Patriots. So I do not agree with that. I don't think they're on the downfall. You know, they're not winning Super Bowls as easily as it, you know, may have seemed earlier in the decade. But, you know, people are starting to catch up.
They've been there a lot.
They've been there quite a lot, and it just shows that how talented they are and how not only the athletes on the field, but the executive staff, the scouting, that they get the right pieces that work for the Patriots. And again, if you have to play Bill Belichick ball, you have to learn that defense and learn that offense and be fast enough to adjust with all of the adjustments that he's going to make. So if you're intelligent enough to learn that system and you're enough of an athlete to contribute, that's what they look for. And they have a great scouting team to find exactly those athletes. And that's why they're consistently in the playoffs every year.
And some teams are always on top and some teams are never on top. So I guess it really comes down to the front office is really the most important part, right? Knowing what direction to go, who to get, rather than just expecting a lot of the guys you have, because there's a constant turnover in football.
You are correct, and that is exactly one of the biggest factors that you don't really see. It's the off-season moves. That, can you get this guy? Can you get that guy? Will that guy pan out to be something that we need? And it takes a hell of a scouting team to find those athletes that fit in the chemistry of your team so that you can put together a winning season.
All right, we're going to go to a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to kind of switch gears because Jude's very involved with the NFL Players Association. We want to talk a little bit about what goes on with these guys after their career. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Anthony LoPasso. Join me every Monday night on the new AC Lowe Show at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Centani Broadcasting Network, high-definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
If you love jazz, check out These Things We Dig, a new CD by jazz sax, flute, and clarinet recording artist James Aldean on Sexton Records. James Aldean has recorded 7 CDs for Sexton Records and appears regularly in the New York metropolitan area, including the great venue, the Whiskey Cafe. These Things We Dig features some of the best jazz and bebop styles, with James fronting the band, complemented by such great players as Mike Ponella, Phil Jones, Bob DeBenedette, Ron Naspo, and Wayne Dunton. You can get this new CD from Sexton Records by going to www.sexton.com. That's C-E-X-T-O-N.com. You can find out more about James Aldean at www.jldeanorchestra.com. For the best in jazz, it's Sexton Records, the audiophile jazz record label. Sexton.com.
Hi, this is Robbie Russell from the Garage Mania Show. 60s, 70s garage psych and punk you can't hear anywhere else. Mixed in with a lot of fun.
This is Nurse Cheryl. Listen to the Garage Mania Show on the Chitani Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital audio
broadcasting
to the world.
Okay, we're back. Now, football, unlike the other sports, it's not just like a question of did somebody get hurt in the game. It's which guys got hurt and how bad. There's like an injury list before every game. So obviously it's a very dangerous game. And how much does that impact most of the guys you know after their career?
Well, you know, like luckily the Giants had a great game, so did the Patriots. But now it's about evaluating your team, seeing who's healthy, who's injured, and how you have to address it. Like we saw one of the tight ends go down with a potentially serious knee injury.
Torn ACL.
Yeah, so now he has to have a long road to recovery, and hopefully he won't miss the entire season. But not just to get to prepare for the next season, or if he misses this season, the season after that, when you're done playing football, that knee injury is definitely going to come back, and it's a lot of adjustment that you have to make. You know, when you stop playing football, like it's rough. You start to really see the toll on your body when you can't have a trainer, you know, stretch you out or you know, go to a chiropractor every day, or, you know, all the treatment that you get to keep us, you know, the patchwork that is our body after football to going every season. You know, when you lose that, it's like, okay, so now I have to do what? Keep eating the way I am, keep lifting as heavy as I can, and you can't do that. So you have to adjust. Like, I'm a shell of the athlete I was. I'm 185 pounds now and lost 50 pounds when I stopped playing football.
Wow. Now, I remember, I think it was Jerome Bettis, I could be wrong, but who said he's in so much pain every morning when he gets up. Do you know a lot of guys like that?
Amy Freeze has nothing on me. I know what the weather's going to be when I wake up. My fingers knows. So if there's a change in pressure, a change in the weather, I know it, and I feel it in my fingers and knees and hips.
Now, what do they do for you guys as far as the health care after your career is over?
Well, really, once you're done playing football, you may get another year, maybe a year and a half of medical treatment, like you have access to, you know, a health plan. But honestly, Andy, you know, it's like getting a bag lunch with a rotten apple in it. Like, here you go. I hope you're going to be all right. Hats off to you. Good luck.
But 5-10 years down the road, they don't know health care for you guys?
You're on your own, guys. Like, football, we don't have a guaranteed contract. So, you know, all these lofty contracts that you see NFL athletes signing, know that they don't normally see all of that money. And even if, you know, they may have a $100 million contract, most of it is weighted towards the last year. And in that last year, they always renegotiate so that they don't have to pay you. So it's rough. It's rough being an athlete in the NFL. But, you know, you sacrifice your body to the football gods, and the gods aren't kind to you once you leave.
So the health care isn't great. What about the pension? What do you have to put in order to get an NFL pension?
You have to get four full accredited seasons to be eligible for your pension. And I can say I'm at 3 3/4 seasons, so
no.
I'm not even eligible. Yeah,
you,
it's rough.
You were like a quarter of a season away?
It's rough. Yeah, it is rough.
Do they do that on purpose?
Some teams do. Well, it would seem some teams do, because whichever team that you get that fourth year, that vested year, that team would be obligated to pay for your pension. Like, they would be obligated for your pension. So from my perspective, I would say, yes, that is true, but I would hope not. I would hope that wasn't the case.
That reminds me of that guy from the White Sox, the owner. If you ever saw Eight Men Out, the guy, if he won 30 games, he was going to get a bonus, so they, like, held him out for, like, the last 2 weeks so he didn't get him.
Amazing. And it's a tactic from the front office, you know, or, you know, it's beyond me to say. Like, I honestly have seen things that would lead me to believe that were so. And I've seen a lot of situations, you know, through the NFL, and, you know, it's just rough, guys. Like, once you're done playing football, you're pretty much on your own. So it's very important to make sure you get your education and make sure you have something else to fall back on once you're done playing. And if you don't, you know, you can't walk around at 270 pounds all day, you know, saying, hey, I'm a football player, because, you know, you're not running up and down a field every day and you're not getting paid for it. And that muscle is going to turn to fat, and, you know what happens next.
Now, you've actually, speaking of after your career, come up with kind of an interesting direction you've gone. You developed a pet toy, did you not?
Yeah, I actually invented a toy called the Fizzapet. It's an exercise and mental stimulation toy for all kinds of pets, dogs, cats, potbelly pigs, whatever you share your home with.
And I want my pig in shape.
So it's basically a tool to keep your pet entertained and exercised no matter how much space you have. Whether you have a big backyard or whether you live in a studio apartment, you can still ensure that your pet will get exercise and be stimulated. So I liken it to a game system for our pets.
Okay. Now, you said it takes 4 years to get your pension, but what kind of pension can a guy expect? Like, let's say he's making $100,000. What is the NFL minimum now, anyway?
Wow. You know what? I don't know what the NFL minimum now. Damn, and Andy, I don't know what the minimum is, but it's the number of years that you have put into the pension plan. So if you only got 4 years, you're going to get the minimum. And I don't know what that is today, because it's on a certain scale. But if you play 10, like Daryl Green, 20 years, it's going to be quite a significant pension, because you put into it. Plus there are other 401ks and everything else. But as you know, the average lifespan of an NFL athlete is less than 3 years, so very few of us get to see that pension.
Do you have any sense of what percentage of guys actually end up with a pension?
I don't, but I can say it's very low.
Because you know a lot of guys, like, are most of them collecting a pension, or are most of them not?
Most of them are not collecting a pension. Like, I was fortunate enough to play with Darren Sharper. You know, I know his brother, Jamie Sharper, and they have definitely put in more than 4 years, and Darren put in, what, 12, almost 13 years? And I think, hopefully, Darren will be in the Hall of Fame. So he's definitely eligible for his pension and moving on to his broadcast career. Like, he's a very successful athlete and a very successful entrepreneur off the field. But you know, it's rough. It is rough for a lot of us out there. And like, I'm the vice president of the NFLPA chapter here for New York and New Jersey, and we try to reach out to all of our retired players, whether they played one season, training camp, or 10 seasons, to try to find other avenues for them to earn revenue or have speaking engagements, or just to check up on them to make sure they're okay. Because as I said, once you're done playing football, it's like getting a rotten apple inside your bag lunch. You're pretty much on your own.
What type of jobs do you see guys with after their career? Like the average guy, we're not talking about a superstar.
Well, you got to think, a lot of guys can't stand up very long because of all the injury with football. A lot of head injuries, so some guys may not be as articulate, you know, which it's being shown that there's a link between possible Alzheimer's and Parkinson's from the impacts from football. So we are very limited into what we can do. And, you know, I would really like to reach out to the NFLPA and the NFL to make opportunities to give back to our communities, like get some of our kids in shape, or get them more energized and more interested in not just football, but athletics and taking care of their bodies, or, you know, talking about anything, health, resisting drug use. You know, there are a lot of things that we can contribute to our youth and to our young athletes, whether they're gymnasts, football players, or in bands. You know, there are a lot of things that we can do, but there just aren't a lot of programs like that in the NFLPA, and that's what we're trying to change.
What's your prediction for the Giants next year?
I predict, we're going to have to wait and see where this offseason lies. Let's see how many people they retain and how many people they lose. And if they can keep the majority of their core team together, the Giants are going to be back in the playoffs next year.
What would you say they should go for in the draft? What would your opinion be? What do they need? I could see another linebacker.
Another linebacker, maybe more depth in their offensive or defensive line to give those guys a break. Because if you have a fresh body out there rushing a quarterback or blocking for the quarterback, you know, you really can't be worn down by anyone. So that's what I would say, but we'll have to see.
Okay. We are out of time. We will be back next week with a show that Jude will like about animal cognition.
Awesome.
With a dolphin lady, a bird guy, and a bug guy. Talking about what animals do, in fact, know. But until then, we're gone.
Thanks, Andy.